Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, my name is Bruce Norris. Thank you for joining us. Once again, our guest is Shelly Kay. She's president of REOMAC, and she also works with InSource Financial Services, which is a company that buys properties and fixes them and resells them, and she's in charge of the bulk purchases. Shelly, welcome back to our show.
Well, thank you, Bruce. It's a pleasure to be here.
Are lenders generally leaving the properties as is when they sell them?
You know, again, it depends on the market. But I know that with my properties, I'm really going in and I'm fixing them up. We're looking for that end user. There's a demand for properties out there. Prices have dropped substantially, and it really is an advantage to go in and fix the properties up. We don't want to bring the neighborhoods down. We don't want to keep the prices down. We want to enhance the neighborhoods, and so we're going in, fixing them up, and I've talked to a number of other agents that are telling me that they, too, are working with their lenders to fix the properties up, and they're bringing in a lot more buyers that way.
What's so important about that, too, is you support the price of the neighborhood where somebody might just be able to get a refi instead of lose a property.
Exactly, and we don't want to undermine the values of any neighborhood, and the lenders would really prefer to go in and keep the values up. It works. It's a win-win for everybody, the lender as well as the buyer.
You mentioned that there were auction companies members of REOMAC.
Correct.
How do REO agents generally feel about auction companies?
You know, it's, I think, kind of a catch-22. A lot of the agents have worked on properties for a while, and then the lender will take them and put them in an auction. But for the most part, the auction companies and the agents are working in a partnership. They're both for the same purpose, trying to sell the properties. And so in a lot of cases, the agents are still getting part of the commission, and I think it's good for the industry.
Yeah, I like that. This time, that is a change. The last go-around in the 90s, if it went to an auction company, there wasn't an agent that was paid.
No, and the agents are still sitting and doing the open houses, so they really have to work partnership with the auction company. I don't think the auction company could really function successfully without the agent being a partner in there.
No, they need an awful lot more staff than they would possibly be able to have.
Absolutely. And the agents are bringing the buyers.
How do agents, the REO agents, feel about investors?
Most good REO agents have a whole pool of investors that they work with. You know, the biggest problem is that what is an investor and who is an investor? Is it really an investor, or is it an investor wannabe?
There you go. And I'm sure you probably can look at an offer and figure out pretty quickly which one of those it might be.
The investors are so easy to work with because they understand the marketplace and they're not unrealistic about the values. And while most are aware of the current situation in the market and are poised to build their wealth with a buy real estate and wait policy, rents are good and they can get a break even with a good down payment. I would say agents like working with investors, as the seasoned investors know what they want and understand the way the lenders do business. Most will close quickly and get the job done. I mean, it's a plus for the REO agent and the seller to work with a good investor.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Not a lot of agents. You're right. The experienced agents understand the investors have a role to play, but a lot of investors are brand new and they don't understand that they need to hold up their end of the bargain, as in close your escrows, go see the property before you make offers, that type of thing.
And that is exactly it. That's really the, the dilemma is that you have so many people thinking that now's the time to come into the marketplace, and they call themselves investors, and they're not doing their homework. They're not going in. They're not understanding what it takes to buy an REO from a lender, that the contracts are pretty much ironclad, that you have your due diligence, you get to do what you need to do, but, you know, there are addendums that have to be signed. You have to go in and know what you're going to do to the property. You really have to do your homework. if you're going to be an investor. You just don't go in and say to an agent, hey, I'm an investor, I want to buy a property, get me the lowest price and let me make money. That's not what it takes.
Well, you know, and we had just briefly talked about this off air, but in the marketplace with the moratorium having taken the inventory down, multiple offers are very common. And an investor needs to be able to look at a property very quickly and determine the repair cost and the appraisal and literally inside the same day to be competitive.
Oh, very much so. Once they get in that property, they really have to have the experience to know what it will take to fix the property up. Do they have the wherewithal? Do they have the staff that they can put into that property to fix it up at a reasonable price? Can they make their money on it? How long will it take to, whether they want to fix it up and sell it, whether they want to hold it, what are the rents? It's challenging. You can't just go and buy a property, think you're an investor, and hope to make a lot of money off of it.
Not, and especially when prices are going down, that makes it even more fun.
That's it.
Do you see the short sales being a more attractive to the lenders than they may have been in the past?
Absolutely. I think the lenders are finally recognizing that there's so much cost in processing a foreclosure and the time it takes, and with the market going down, that they may get the best value for the property on a short sale. The biggest problem I see is that there are not enough experienced loss mitigators to understand what's going on in the marketplace and have the time. There's such a huge volume out there that I think time is the worst enemy.
There's got to be a whole different set of staff to do short sale or loss mitigation. And then there's REO or asset manager. Do they ever communicate before a property ultimately goes to the courthouse steps and say which one of these is probably going to be the best scenario, or are they too busy to ever have that conversation?
You know, when I worked at Option One, we would sit down sometimes with the loss mitigation department. If they asked us a question, if they wanted to speak to our agent, they also had formulas on a spreadsheet that if we took a short sale, this is what we would make. If it went to REO, this is what our loss would be. If we went to REO, this is what our loss would be. There was always calculations mm-hmm. showing what the losses were. Although sometimes you have some loss mitigation people and people that are working in that department that really are not familiar with what's happening in the marketplace. And, you know, we're not taking the short sales.
We've noticed a big, big change in the opening bids at the courthouse steps in the last 90 days. I would say prior to the last the 90-day period, they were not at all discounting. And all of a sudden, they've really had opening bids that make sense, and they've sold a lot of properties to third-party bidders. I was wondering, is there communication with the REO agent doing broker price opinions prior to the trustee sale?
Oh, there's always a value.
Okay.
Yeah, the lenders are always getting a broker price opinion and trying to determine what the value of that property is. The biggest dilemma, of course, is that they're not getting into the property
yes.
prior to that foreclosure sale. So they don't know what the condition of the property is. So sometimes at the sale, you know, you may get a higher bid than you would think that the property is worth, but that's only because they're drive-by BPOs. But absolutely, every time that property is going to sale, there's always a broker price opinion of some sort on that property so that the lender knows what the value is.
How much are the lenders paying for broker price opinions?
Well, it depends. I've talked to some agents, and they're paid anywhere from $45 to $50 for a drive-by BPO and, say, $75 to $100 for an interior BPO.
A drive-by BPO sounds a little easier than it is. That physically means you don't see the inside of the house, but you almost do as much work on paper as an appraiser.
Absolutely. You are doing a full, complete analysis of the property and all of the comps. The only thing is you just don't know what's going on in the property itself. You may walk around and drive around the property. You know what the outside looks like, so maybe you can judge if the outside is well kept up, perhaps the inside is well kept up. But all you're doing is you're giving an opinion of value based on just driving around the outside of the property.
This is just a little bit off subject, but they just changed the appraisal rules with the HVCC. And I just wondered if you had people that were part of your group affected by that, as far as having a management company assign them Fannie and Freddie appraisals.
You know, I have not. I haven't really spoken. I know that's a new law, and I haven't really spoken to any of the agents regarding that. I did speak to one that said what's happening is the closings are taking a little bit longer. I guess the agents are getting a little bit, or the appraisers are getting a little bit more detailed and making sure they get it right.
Well, what's also happening is they're getting paid half as much.
Yeah, and the only problem I find with that is, you know, I know that it's supposed to be an arm's length transaction and we want the appraiser to give an accurate value without any influence, but a lot of times that agent was able to point out to the appraiser something maybe about the neighborhood or something surrounding it, the school system, something that the appraiser didn't know that needed to take into consideration when making that valuation. So although I know they want to make sure that there's no fraud involved in it, I really do think that that REO agent was helping the appraiser get a truer value.
Absolutely. You know, that's what's frustrating. And since you're on the investment side, we repair properties inside of a month, going from complete trash to completely brand new virtually. And then we can't sell them until the 91st day because there's an assumption that investors are up to something if we turn the properties too quickly. And the same thing is true when you have a mortgage broker and an appraiser that they have a relationship with. Why is the assumption that they're up to something as opposed to maybe 99% of them, or certainly in the 90s, are trying to get the best appraiser with the most accurate history?
Well, that's absolutely correct. I know years ago when I would tell the agent, will you meet the appraiser? I was an agent. I used to go and meet the appraiser.
Sure.
I didn't give him any information other than what he asked me for. I wasn't out to set up a price. It was, can I help you with anything? Is there anything you need? Don't forget, there's this down the street. This is the school district. Do you need anything from the MLS? No, yes. It was never to taint the appraisal. It was always to see if I could be some help to the appraiser if they needed any additional information.
Yeah, it was a team.
Yeah, absolutely. The appraiser doesn't necessarily have the wherewithal to get all the information in the MLS.
No, and now they're going to get paid half as much. So how much time do they really expect somebody to do, you know, to take when I don't know. It seems counterproductive once again.
And again, I've been feeling the same way, that I understand the concept. We definitely do not want fraud in the industry. But we also need to work with everybody in the industry and work as a team.
I happened to read a report that, and I'm pretty familiar with statistics, but this one, I have to admit, I hadn't ever seen a pie chart that looked like this. 35% of option arm borrowers, this is countrywide now, not countrywide lender, national.
Yes.
35% of them are already behind in payments. 72% of option arm owners owe more than the house is worth, and California has 58% of all of those loans.
Yeah.
That is astonishing.
Astonishing. And also for those, there are, and I don't have the statistics in front of me, but there are so many statistics showing that the people that are in workout plans and modifications, they're going right back into default.
That's right.
There's a huge percentage of those people going back into default.
Well, and this is one of those dilemmas where you have an off-air, again, we talked about, but these are the real numbers. We had a property that somebody owed $365 and we bought it for something around $80. Well, how do you go next door and say, okay, let's work this out. Let's make a loan modification. We're not going to change what you owe, but we're going to change that payment, and that's all going to make sense to you. You know, that I don't see how that would make sense. Even if it made sense day one, about day 60 or 90, you look over there and the neighbor next door is at, you know, being able to still buy a new car, and you're sitting here making a house payment knowing I can't move for 15 years.
Correct. It really is very unfair. It's very imbalanced. And I don't know if our government took into consideration the people on the outskirts of being in default. There are so many people close to default, and they're unable to move forward because they're trying to make their payments on loans that are very high.
Well, you know, I don't think we're going to save the guy that owes $365 on a neighborhood that's now worth $140.
Right.
But I think there is a case to save the person that owes $225. And the only way that happens is when that house goes back to a reasonable price, because $140 isn't a reasonable price either. We've now skewed too far the other way. We're now too low. And if we get supported by natural causes, and we had talked a little bit about this too, but there's a lot of vacant properties that are going to be created in California in the next 18 months. And I think that there should be some plans to have investors get financing for those.
Oh, absolutely. That's, I think, one of the biggest issues is we don't have enough out there for buyers, for loans. The lenders are scared. They're still not putting the money out into the marketplace. Where was all this money, all this TARP money going?
Mm-hmm.
People are still having problems getting loans. If there are no loans and nothing affordable for people to purchase the homes, how are we going to move this inventory?
Well, I don't think it's one at a time. You know, I really think that somebody's going to have to realize it's going to be bought by the dozen and turned into rentals for a while. We had almost 70% homeownership, a percentage of occupants were homeowners. And historically, it's more like 62-63%. And I have a feeling we're going to return to those numbers, which leaves a lot of vacant homes.
Well, yes, you're right, and you're correct. We need to make them into rental units, but affordable rental units. We still have people that are losing their jobs and still need a place to live. We still have people that have lost their homes need a place to live. They need to live within their means. So I think if investors are purchasing those properties and putting them on the market, we have to be careful not to keep raising rents also.
Well, usually the market takes care of that number. If there's enough rentals, then the price comes down. And that is occurring in some areas in California just by natural causes. I've heard the word quite a bit called shadow inventory. And I'm just curious, what was your feeling on that, the amount of inventory that the lenders have taken back and it's not yet emerged? Not yet listed.
There's a lot of inventory out there. I've talked to a number of lenders that are saying they have been told by their management that the burst of the bubble is coming within the next 60 days. I don't know that they've been holding that much inventory as much as the moratoriums have stopped a lot of the foreclosures. And there's just a built-up or a pent-up inventory that are just waiting to go through that final foreclosure action. And within the next 60 days, I'm hearing that things are going to explode.
In San Bernardino County, and these are pretty accurate numbers, we had 40,000 trustee sales in 2008, and we had about 22,000 sales. So you would have had to have 18,000 extra REOs if every one of the sales of 22,000 was an REO sale.
So wow. But you also have evictions.
Well, yes, but I'm saying the inventory went back to the lender 40,000 times and only 22,000 total homes were sold. So there's some shadow inventory in San Bernardino County. There's extra houses that haven't shown up yet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as I'm saying, we're really expecting that the inventory will explode very shortly.
Are there states that are looking at this going, what are they talking about? It's no problem where we are.
There are some that have been hit less than others.
Okay.
Definitely. But for the most part, everybody is feeling the same pain.
Okay. Now, do you think that California is going to be experiencing a greater amount of pain in the next 18 months, and is also there going to be higher priced inventory affected?
Well, definitely.
Okay.
Absolutely. I was reading some statistics that are saying that some of the high priced inventory is now hitting the foreclosure market, and more prime inventory is going into default. So it's not just the subprime these days. It is prime inventory. People are losing their jobs. The economy is just really so bad at this point that some of your more expensive homes are being defaulted on.
I hear advertisements every day. The lawyers are on the radio talking to the client who's behind, and they're talking about the dirty lender and the abuse and so forth. Is this causing lenders a real problem with, you know, people looking for loopholes and ways not to pay?
The attorneys are looking for the loopholes.
Oh, absolutely.
No, definitely.
It's got to be causing the lenders some concern, I would think.
Definitely. I don't know if there are that many out there, but there are, and I know that some attorneys are working on trying to stop those attorneys that are doing some of that damage.
If you had the ear of the president, what national policy changes would you like to see implemented that might help get housing back on its feet?
That's a really interesting question. I would love to sit down with Mr. Obama, and I guess I would tell him to worry more about creating jobs so that more people could keep their homes. With the auto plants and businesses closing, there's no way for recovery unless people have jobs. And you look at Detroit and Cleveland. These areas are so depressed and will continue to be that way as employment moves out of the cities. I mean, you can go into Detroit and probably buy up an entire block for $200.
And then do nothing with it.
And then sit there because the city is not assisting you in any way, shape, or form. And I think the president needs to work on jobs, needs to make the principalities and the municipalities cooperate with the buyers or the lenders to assist them, maybe have some programs set up, put into effect so that they can work on the properties and fix them up. I mean, look at Long Beach. Long Beach had so many programs, and look at how Long Beach came back into some of the downtown areas because the city was helping people do that.
Absolutely.
I think I would ask him to put more 40-year mortgages in place right now so payments become more affordable.
Okay.
And also, I would say let the market run its course. I mean, some homeowners should never have purchased a home because they really couldn't afford the payments. And I would tell him that not to put any more moratoriums, that just let the economy work itself out. And I would also ask him to provide incentives to lenders for working with homeowners on short sales. Perhaps then the properties wouldn't go into foreclosure. Maybe the lenders need some incentive.
Do you think that it would be a good policy maybe to look at this as a once-in-a-lifetime event, a lot of people losing their homes that never even missed a payment in their life, where you might be able to say, okay, we're going to forgive this foreclosure a whole lot quicker credit-wise than we ever would have before?
Definitely, definitely. I think that's a big problem for so many people is I don't know how long the relief from the tax ramifications are going to be in place, but that's been a big issue. The credit, if they lose their good credit, people are hanging on. They're struggling. It's really a kind of a catch-22 for these people that are really wanting to make their payments and can't.
It sure is.
And I think the last thing I would say to the president is that I would recommend he speak with those people that are in the field handling the crisis every day before implementing new legislation that creates more problems than it fixes. You know, he needs to speak to the lender, speak to the REO agent, consult with that REO foreclosure and eviction attorney, talk with the asset manager, look at the everyday workings of the industry. Maybe then he and the legislators would get more of an accurate feel about what's actually happening in the marketplace.
Absolutely.
It just feels that legislation has been passed without real good thought as to what the reality of the everyday working of the industry is.
I agree. Shelley, we are out of time, unfortunately. Shelley, we've really enjoyed these last two sessions. Once more, the website for REOMAC is just
REOMAC.com? www.reomac.com. It's REOMAC.com.
Okay. Shelley, thanks again so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.